specific differences, unreal, as opposed to such attributes as the infinite will experience, absolute indifference, consciousness, and so on. Page 415. The second-rate thought, to which the world always appears as a mysterious presentation in which only the initiate knows what goes on behind the scenes, which sets philosophy to solving an ostensibly riddle in order to know once and for all, or even to despair that such a key is not to be found. This sort of dogmatism does not exist in Hegel. Rather, the dialectical method quickly led him to become aware of the stupidity of such philosophical work and to see in development and flux what presents itself as absolute and eternal. Insofar as this method in Hegel nevertheless still belongs to an idealistic system, he has not freed his thought from the old contradiction. His philosophy, too, is ultimately characterized by the indifference to particular perceptions, ideas, and goals, which belongs to relativism, as well as by the transformation of conceptual structures into substances and the inability to take theoretical and practical account of the dogmatism in historical genesis of his own thought. Its dogmatic side has been especially often attacked in the critique of cognition since the middle of the 19th century. In place of those doctrines which made an abstract concept into substance, that is, which sought to raise this limited aspect over history as identical with being and thus degenerated into naive faith, Hegel puts the hypostatization of his own system in his polemic against skepticism and relativism. Footnote 9, text. He himself says, the goal is fixed for knowledge just as necessarily as the succession in the progress. It is there where knowledge no longer needs to go beyond itself, where it finds itself, and the concept fits the object the concept. The progress to this end is therefore also continuous, and satisfaction is not to be found at any earlier stage. Hegel believes that he guarantees this satisfaction through the whole of his thought. For him, philosophy has the same absolute content as religion, the complete unity of subject and object, a final and eternal valid knowledge. What man, ensnared on all sides in the finite, seeks is the region of a higher substantial truth in which all the oppositions and contradiction of the finite can find their final resolution and freedom its complete satisfaction. This is the region of the truth in itself and not of the relatively true. The highest truth, the truth as such, is the resolution of the highest opposition and contradiction. In it, the opposition of freedom and necessity, of spirit and nature, of knowledge and object, law and impulse, opposition and contradiction in general, whatever form they may take, no longer has validity and force as opposition and contradiction. Page 416. Ordinary consciousness, on the other hand, does not get out of this contradiction and either despair in it or discard it and helps itself in some other way. But philosophy steps into the middle of the mutually contradictory propositions, knows them according to their significance, that is, as not absolute in their one-sidedness, but self-resolving, and places them in the harmony and unity which is the truth. To grasp this concept of truth is the task of philosophy, for philosophy also has no other subject than God and is thus rational theology, and by being in the service of truth is continuous service of God. Footnote 10, text. According to Hegel himself, the doctrine of an absolute self-contained truth has the purpose of harmonizing in a higher spiritual region the opposition and contradictions not resolved in the world. Especially in his later lectures and writings, he stresses that the region of truth, freedom, and satisfaction, footnote 11, text, is to be found not in the mechanism of reality, but in the spiritual spheres of art, religion, and philosophy. He opposes this peace and satisfaction in thought not only to skeptical despair, but to the active attitude which tries to overcome the incompleteness of existing conditions in some other way. This dogmatic narrow-mindedness is not some sort of an accidental defect of his doctrine, which one can strip off without changing anything essential. Rather, it is inextricably bound up with the idealistic character of his thought and enters into all the details of his application of the dialectic. Hegel cannot be reproached for the role in his thought played by external observation from which, as Strandellenberg points out in Criticism, footnote 12, the basis concept of the dialectic movement comes. He himself expounded the importance of experience for philosophy. Rather, in contemplating his own system, Hegel forgets one very definite side of the empirical situation. The belief that this system is the completion of truth hides from him the significance of the temporarily conditioned interest which plays a role in the details of the dialectical presentation through the direction of thought, the choice of material content, and the use of names and words, and diverts attention from the fact that his conscious and unconscious partisanship in regard to the problem of life must necessarily have its effect as a constituent element of his philosophy. Thus, his conception of folk and freedom, which form the backbone of many parts of his work, are not perceived in terms of their temporal presuppositions and their transitory character, but, on the contrary, are, as conceptual realities and forces, made the basis of the historical development from which they are abstracted.